If your restaurant wants to put the best on the table, look for food with a New York State certified seal. It's food that is grown right, right here. Learn more at certified.ny.gov.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Why Food. We're back in season. This is season two of Why Food and I'm here doing episode 13. It's a pleasure to be back. It's a nice day. It's warm outside. And as always, the show is following the same kind of theme where each guest is going to discuss their transition of moving from a past career into the food industry. But this season is going to have a different touch. Last season, it was all about the people and just individual stories. This season, each episode is going to focus on a career path within the food and beverage industry. So we're going to be ranging from chefs to food critics to food photographers to restaurateurs, covering as much as we can, pastry chefs included in that. And from that, gauging a story of each person that has made a transition into the career in the food industry and hopefully giving you, the listener, insight into how they can make it in the food industry and also give you maybe some optimism and inspiration if you too want to make the switch and move over. I'm just so delighted to have Chef Yo here with me today. He's here representing the chef episode of this season. And his story is probably better than most to give you inspiration of how you can crack it within the food industry. Thanks very much for joining us here today, Chef.
Thank you for having me.
And Chef Yo and his business partner, Kobe, here is in the restaurant. And they both own the Pinto Group of Restaurants, which is Pinto in Brooklyn Heights and Pinto in the West Village.
Yeah, we have two restaurants in New York. And the first restaurant that we opened, it's since 2006.
Right.
Yeah.
And just to give the listeners an idea, if they were to go to Pinto, what would they be going for? What's the food and what's the vision of Pinto as a group of restaurants?
I mean, we've been doing I'm originally from Thailand. So we've been doing Thai food. The original idea that it started just, use the local ingredients to incorporate with the Thai cuisine and create the authentic Thai recipe with the Thai flavors, but, based on whatever available in the market at that time.
And that's a hot topic right now. A lot of people want to do that, but that wasn't necessarily a common thing 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think it wasn't, but I got inspired through my friends who is a chef. So we came up with this idea since 2006. We tried to, search. It's fun, it's try to search like the local ingredients and think about what it could become Thai food,
Yeah, I can attest for the amazing food at Pinto. I ate there last week. The food was beautiful. It was so different for me because I lived in the very sheltered world of Thai food, I have to say. And I think a lot of people do. I ate in those kind of typical mid-price restaurants where generally the food would be to go and you'd be getting pad thai with chicken. Mm-hmm. But when I came to you, it was... First of all, it's worth mentioning that a lot of the food is based on regions. It's not just generic Thai food, right?
Yes, that's what the Pinto Garden that we're trying to do. We try to introduce other dishes from Thailand besides Pad Thai or any other noodle that people already know. I think it's fun for us, and I think it's fun for the guests that they come into Pinto Garden as well, that they can explore many parts of Thailand and different flavors that they used to be.
Yeah, it definitely is. And when you go to Pinto Garden in the West Village, it's like being welcomed into a home because, as anyone knows who's eaten in the West Village, all the spaces are tiny. But this one is particularly homey. It's like a little cottage when you go in there, and there's a nice space out in the back as well.
Yeah, that's what we plan to do. Once you got this space, it's literally like a little home, little cottage, as you said. The kitchen is so tiny. Like, it's very small. So me and my business partner, Kobe, we create like this little home. To be like, you're coming to my house and having Thai food in West Village.
So you're bringing the times from Bangkok over to the West Village.
Yeah, it's good to have like a little tiny homey feeling.
Yeah, it's
great. Yeah.
A home away from home. So let's talk about that. You were brought up in Bangkok. You were raised in Bangkok and lived there for the early stages of your life. But before all that, before, and this goes back to the story of the show, before you ever got into food, you were studying theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that come about? How did you get into theater?
I mean, the theater part of me, like when I was a kid, I had a chance to study abroad in London. And at that time, you know, I couldn't speak English at that time. I was 12. But I saw like all the posters, the shows everywhere. I have little money, have no friends, have nowhere to go. And then there's a lot of posters of Miss Saigon and everything. I'm like, okay, I don't know what it is. I went there and see it. And I'm like, oh, okay, what is this? I have no idea what the theater is. And then I got captivated by that, and I love it. And then after that, I came back home and then, you know, try to do more research, listen to all the CDs, and then, you know, just captivated by theater, musical right. theater.
And then you kept that going, and then...
Just keep going, and then even though when I went to college, even though my mom... trying to say no to me, like not going that way, but I'm a very stubborn kid. I'm like, I love theater. I'm gonna do anything about theater. So I went to college in Thailand, studied theater design.
Because that's the thing, because although, you know, for listeners in America and listeners in other Western parts of the world, theater is something that's been there for decades and centuries. So going into theater, although it is a stretch and it's a very competitive world, it's a bit more real and it's a bit more tangible probably than doing theater in Thailand, because theater in Thailand isn't necessarily a huge industry. It's not a big business, is it?
Yeah, it's not a business at all when I study it. And actually, theater is like, it's very Western. It's Western culture. So to study theater in Thailand, it just, you know, all the parents and my friends and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, they don't even know what it is. And way back there, we don't even have internet. Also, they not be able to go on YouTube and see, you know, what it is. So I have just talk about among my friends, like the experience that they had, and just keep doing it. But yeah, so it's struggle. Even nowadays, it's getting better in Thailand about theater, but still, it's not our culture. So right. I don't think people know what it is, and there's no reason to go for it.
Yeah, well, I suppose you were lucky in that sense. At a younger age, you were exposed to Western culture before you even came here, because you had to be by looking at theater and by looking at the plays and the stories that were told within that, because I'm sure they were very different to the stories that would be told in Thai dramas.
Yeah, it's the way that they represented or the way they tell the story is totally different. So I learned a lot through theater, like in my past.
And then after you finished studying theater in Thailand, what did you do after that?
I mean, I had a chance to work with my kind of like my boss. Like, he's a director in Thailand. Worked with him like for a couple of years. So we literally started the musical in Thailand together. Now he has his own theater. But I mean, and then while working with him, I always loved New York, and I always want to come to live in New York. So I told him, like, I want to study abroad, and I want to spend time, like, you know, a couple of years and see a Broadway show, living like a Broadway baby dream, you know, those kind of stuff. It's fun, and it's a kid, like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you was 20, everyone who loved theater wanted to come to New York to explore it, to see what it is, to experience it. So then I decided to come to New York to study and then, you know, live my life.
And it's worth noting, don't leave yourself shy. You got into Columbia and you studied a master's program in Columbia. So that was a great achievement by you, I'm sure, to have come from Thailand where you weren't coming from a massive drama school, mm-hmm. to have been accepted to study a master's program in Columbia. So
yeah, it's very challenging and it's very honor. But it's very difficult as well for me as the kid and who has to be auditioned and do everything about Western theater. So it took me a long time to achieve that.
And then during that time, I suppose this leads into the next part of the story. While you were there, that was when you started working in restaurants, right? When you were studying in Colombia.
Yes, that's how I think it's every kind of like actor's life or director's life or whoever do arts. Live in New York, have to explore this part. You
totally.
Have to work in the restaurant.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm one of them. So I start as a busboy.
It's the most flexible job because, you know, you can just build your shifts around. It's cash, exactly. you can build your shifts around your auditions.
You get friends, and then, you know, you work a night audition in the morning. That's the actor's life.
Yeah, tough life.
I mean, well, in the past, nowadays they have like their own Facebook things. They can live and they can do audition themselves, and they
that's
get
true,
exposed.
That's
so
true.
It's a totally different story.
Yeah.
But in the past, yes.
In the good old days.
Well, it's classic. I love it now. Yeah, so I started as a busboy, you know, work my to earn cash because I cannot ask my mom money to get through the college and everything because living in New York is so expensive. But having a good time with the restaurant work.
So, but you didn't stop there. So you, while you were there, because you did your master's for a very long time.
Yes,
it was
about like five years and a half.
Yeah, so that's a long period to have been in college at that stage. So while you were doing it, you were working in restaurants, but you were progressing through the restaurants, right?
Yes. So I started as busboy, to be a runner, server, you know, manager.
So you got all aspects of the front of house.
Yes. I can see like the system of the restaurant business.
And did you work between different restaurants? Was it Thai restaurants or was it kind of American restaurants?
It's a Thai restaurant. But that restaurant groups, they have many, many locations. So I'm like switching around.
Is there... Last season, we had two guys who have a Greek restaurant, and one of their ideas when opening a Greek restaurant was to have Greek the word is I can't find it now, but there's a particular term for Greek hospitality. Mm-hmm. And that's what they wanted to apply as well as the food in their Greek restaurant. Is there something like that in Thailand? Is there a notion of how people should be served and a style of service in Thai restaurants
during the time that I started in the restaurant or generally? Interesting. I think it's, well, people know about Thai people that they are always smile, you know,
right.
we smile through everything, through the struggle, to the problems, but we always give people smile.
Yeah.
I think the hospitality, that the idea of being Thai, you know, Thai people always, you know, smile to everything and happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the deep down there for the restaurants or hotel or hospitality.
And then during those times while you were in the restaurants for 5.5 years, mm-hmm. was there ever a time where you thought to yourself, maybe this is an option, maybe I'll do this for a living instead of theater? Or,
yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of like turning point of me during the time that I live in New York and work and go to school. So I see the differences, like, okay, I would put it this way. I see more reality than what I dream about, you know, so... I see that I can make a living by working in restaurant business, and I see the potential, like, oh, having a restaurant business is not that bad. And that's how it became like, okay, if I want to live in New York longer, what should I do? So I talk about this to my mom, and she's just like, finally, you got into the real world. So she gave me, like, she's very generous. She gave me like money to open my restaurant with my friends.
Right, and who were the guys that you joined up with when you opened your first restaurant?
So we have two people joining me, my business partner, Kobe, and my friend who's a chef called Chef Tony. He used to work at Chong George, but he's my school friend. Like, we know each other 20 years.
So he grew up in Bangkok as well?
He grew up in Bangkok. We went to elementary school together through high schools, and then he went to CIA for the culinary.
And what kind of a restaurant was he working at Chong George? Well, was it a
French? It's Chong George.
Yeah. Okay. So he had learned all those French techniques while he was there.
Yes. And then he worked there about 4 or 5 years during that time. And right before I graduated, I decided to open a restaurant. So I talked to him like, "You want to work with us?" And he agreed to open. Then, and that's in 2006. And then that's the Pinto come up.
Well, before we unpack Pinto within itself, we're going to go to a break because this is a good old story of how Pinto came about and the good and the bad and the ugly of it all. So
Okay. We're
just going to go to a quick break and then we'll come back with Chef Yo.
And this one is called Dues Paid by Rectech. We'll be right back. Yeah.
New York chefs and restaurants are proud of the food they put on the table. And serving produce that comes from local, environmentally responsible farms is a way to leave an even better taste in everyone's mouth. So when shopping for your ingredients, look for the New York State Grown and Certified seal. It lets you know which food is grown right here in New York State, certifying the food that comes from local farms that meet a higher standard. You'll not only be serving local food, you'll be supporting local farmers. Learn more about the New York State Grown and Certified program at certified.ny.gov.
Welcome back to Why Food. We're here kicking off again with the first episode of season two, and I'm here with Chef Yo from Pinto Garden. So just before we went to the break, we were talking about your background working in theater, working in drama, and then during that time while you were studying at Columbia, you worked in different various restaurants.
Yes.
Now, during that time, or after you graduated, I suppose it's worth mentioning, there was a bit of a struggle in getting work, right? So that was a Kickstarter for looking at other alternatives, and that's when you came to the conclusion with an investment and with your business partners that you were going to open up your first restaurant.
Yes.
So you guys come together. You had been working in front of house. Mm-hmm. Chef Tony had been working Jean-Georges. Mm-hmm. Kobe was working in restaurants. Was Kobe managing restaurants as well?
Yes.
So you had two front of house, one back of house. Perfect. And you sat down and you said, right, we're going to open up a restaurant. What's it going to be? Mm-hmm. What did you decide there and then? What was it going
to
be?
I mean, it has to be, well, first of all, at that time, I was 26.
Very young.
I was a kid.
Extremely young to open a restaurant.
Yeah, I was a kid. I have no idea what it is. I just jumped into the business that I never studied about. I just work in a restaurant in New York, and I'm like, everyone can open a restaurant, and why not me? So we have that very innocent idea and don't know what it is. So it just come up from who we are. It definitely has to be Thai restaurant because that's what we grew up and that's what we eat and that's what we know about. So, but what kind of Thai restaurant are we going to open? We got a location which is just very fun location, I would say, in 2006.
Christopher Street 10 years ago. So Christopher Street was a pretty dodgy place back then.
Yeah, it's just all like, it's just old gay bar in 70s and sex toy stores, like all those stuff. But we just, I don't know what make us open that one. I always love West Village though.
Yeah.
So when we were, we see the possibility of the space. But as I told you before, that we so naive and very innocent. So, you know, we just like, oh, we have a dream house to build. Let's build it in the middle of nowhere that people are not going to walk through it. But, you know, we didn't think about it. We just see the possibility that we have this budget and we have this space and let's create it. And it's just come along.
Yeah. I'm sure, I can only imagine back then, you know, when you guys were planning out and financing it, like you said, you guys must have just been so naive, because did you have anyone, like a mentor, anyone giving you guys advice, anyone suggesting
Nobody
stuff?
Nobody at all. Like,
really?
Interesting. Like, I don't know, is it a secret thing or is it, or maybe we don't know much people.
Yeah.
We didn't know many people at that time. So we just, like a group of kids who have a dream to create, like, okay, let's do some business.
So Kobe, Tony, and Yo were just in their own little bubble.
Yeah, and then, okay, let's do what it is. Okay, we like this. Let's do that. We like this space. And we took over the chocolate factory. It used to be a chocolate factory in that space on Christopher Street. And they never moved out for 75 years. So we have to rebuild everything. There's no gas. There's no kitchen. There's no basement. Like, we literally had to build everything from scratch with no idea what it is. Like, really, we didn't know the system. Yeah. So we invest a lot.
And was the space similar to Pinto Garden or was it very different?
It's very different. Yeah. For the original Pinto, it's very small, only 700 square feet. We have the kitchen, small kitchen, bathroom, and the basement. And we have a little bar, but the total is going to be like about 30 seats. So it's very small, small narrow restaurant.
And was it was somewhat of a high end Thai restaurant that you wanted to open. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, you could say that, but we didn't plan to have it to be a high end. We just want to be...
you want it to do higher quality.
Higher quality.
Yeah.
Yes. Like different from the other Thai restaurants that what we plan to use better ingredients. And
so people say when you open your first restaurant, the first year is very difficult.
Oh, the first 3 years, yes.
The first 3 years for you guys, yeah.
Yes. The struggle. Like I literally have no place to stay. Like I slept with my friend's apartment. I have no money to pay the rent.
So how did you guys keep it open? How did you guys keep afloat?
Just keep doing it.
Just keep doing it day by day.
Just keep doing it day by day. I work 7 days a week for 3 years, no break. Like three of us literally work every day, and not hiring many people. So you know, so the income that's coming in, just pay the rent, pay the distributors. Like pay all those stuff. Yeah.
And what did you learn during those 3 years?
My God. I learned every single thing. But it's already 10 years back, you know. When I found the problems or those obstacles, I didn't see as a problem. I didn't suffer with it. You know, I use theater to, you know, kill this part by seeing the obstacles and everything. It's just the thing that you need to solve. You not suffer from it. You just see, okay, this is like challenging you. Okay, you have this problem coming today. The refrigerator is broken. Like, what are you going to do? You have no need to hire people to fix it. What are you going to do? You know, that's kind of like very challenging and learning from that. I mean, it's fun.
It's a day-by-day learning experience.
It's a day-by-day learning experience.
So what was the turning point after 3 years? Why was it such a struggle for 3 years, and why did it become better after 3 years?
I mean, the first year that we opened, we just create menu and all the stuff that we like, and we don't even ask our audience or our guests like what they like, you know. So we create a menu, just do whatever we want to eat, and we see that it must be good. That's what we thought. But we never asked the...
So you were very much guests. Living in your own bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we never
talked about three Thai guys in a Thai bubble.
Yeah.
And then hoping that people from New York would eat.
Yeah. And people would talk about it. People would see through it. And like, but whatever. But, and even the people in neighborhood at that time, they're like, are you crazy? Open a restaurant on Christopher Street? Like, nobody going to walk on this street. That was in 2006, right? But we're like, no, it could happen. Like, why not, right? If we do the best thing that we can, it must be, like, people might see it in some way. But we adjust to it, like, during 3 years. So we're learning from the guests that come into a restaurant, and they, you know, we listen to the people, what they like, what they don't like about it. So we adjust the item, we adjust the price, we adjust the quality, like, those kind of things that like you have to listen to what they're asking for,
right,
and adjust to it, not just yourself. Yeah.
So 10 years later, if I was able to pull 26-year-old Yo, sit him in the chair here, mm-hmm. and he said, I'm opening up a restaurant, do you have any advice? What would you say to him to make the life easier?
Not open it yet. Learn it first. I would say that. I mean, do more homework, like not rush into it. Just see surrounding, like do a lot of research and not just go with the guts. Right. Like I'm the person who, you know, the theater people, I just do everything
based
on instinct. I think it's going to be good and then it's going to be good. But in the real world, it's not 100%. Like, but sometimes I mean, you can get through it.
Sometimes things just take time.
Yeah, that's true.
That's really what it comes down to. You know, it's, If you watch the Netflix documentary Chef's Table, mm-hmm. a vast majority of those restaurants on that show who can sometimes have two-star Michelin restaurants mm-hmm. struggled for 3-4 years. Yeah. We really had no guests, but they just kept turning up every day.
Yeah.
And like you said, adjusted the menu, listened to people, and mm-hmm. that's what it comes down to. I think that's what it comes down to a lot of things in life, that if you work in a job and you're doing something that's different, mm-hmm. you're doing something that's a bit more difficult, mm-hmm. rarely is it going to be good straight away. Similar mm-hmm. to artists, similar to people who make music. You know, yeah. they'll make music and they'll make bad music for a little mm-hmm. while, and then they'll keep doing it and keep doing it, and it'll come good. So
yeah, I think it's applied to many jobs and many careers.
Definitely.
But the most important thing, you have to be honest to your job. Like very honest, like at the beginning of opening a restaurant, I'm not honest to my career or even my restaurant at all. Because I opened a restaurant in order to earn money, in order to do theater. That's the first instinct that I opened a restaurant.
Okay.
Which is, I feel like this day, at that time, I didn't honest to my job that much. I didn't honor to be a chef in a restaurant at all. I'm like, no, I want to be a director. I want to do theater.
So you had two different mindsets.
Yes. But yeah,
you were kind of, one eye was on the restaurant, but one eye was on your other goal that you wanted to go to chase.
Yes.
At the same time.
So in reality, I have a restaurant, but I didn't pay attention much to it.
Right.
I'm just waiting, like, when it's going to make money enough for me to go to do what I love. But time goes by and I just change perspective, look through things. I'm like, oh, come on. The restaurant is the thing that I have. Like, why not I just focus on what I already have and make it the best I can? So I just put like a theater lens through the restaurant thing. So I look through it as a restaurant is my theater. And I'm a director in the kitchen doing like all the stuff and serving a show every night. It's the same thing. Like, if you just change the perspective.
It's a just, great sense of maturity.
But it takes time, as you said before. Like, when I was 26, I wouldn't think about it. But times go by, and once I change that perspective, it totally changed the environment. I changed the way I treat my staff. I changed the way when I come into a restaurant. Like, I used to be like, I don't want to go to a restaurant that's so empty and it didn't make any money, you know? But nowadays, even though we not have, like, someday we don't have, like, many guests, I still want to go there. Because it's kind of like my theater, you know. If you don't have an audience, I'm like, I can perform. Like,
totally.
It's fun.
One thing that we kind of skipped on there that we have to talk about is the fact that when you opened Pinto, you weren't a chef.
No.
You were never a chef.
I never even cook.
So when did you decide that you were going to start working in the kitchen a bit more? When you opened, because was Kobe always front of house?
Yeah, Kobe is always front of the house.
And then you were kind of moving between front and back, were
yes.
you?
Yes.
So at what stage, and during that time you were learning a little bit, you mentioned that you were reading The French Laundry by Thomas Gallagher, you were getting a bit of practice through that book.
Yeah, my friend Chef Tony, he's introduced me into the culinary world. As I said before, like I just want to be a director, I didn't want to be a chef. But because of Pinto, the original one that we opened, we couldn't hire anyone, so I have to be a chef. Apparently. And then, okay, if I have to do it, what I have to do. So Chef Tony taught me kind of thing. So you throw the French Laundry cookbook. And I'm like, okay, look through it. This is another world that you need to explore. I'm like, okay, what is this? And I keep reading about, you know. And that makes me get into the culinary world and open my eyes.
That's a very difficult place to start, though, because a lot of people who are pretty good, accomplished cooks would go to the French Laundry to start to learn.
Yeah, so. I think what the main reason that
Chef Tony threw you in the deep end.
Yes, he wants to see. It's the same thing that I saw the show on Broadway and see, like, you know, this is the highest standard of the performance for the Broadway show. I think it's the same thing with why Chef Tony threw away the French Laundry cookbook to me. He wanted me to see that the chef is not just cooking the food and satisfies the guests. Like, there are more details and more people that sacrifice into the job. It's an art.
Yeah.
That's why they call it culinary art. Yeah.
Totally. It's completely an art.
And it needs like dedications and practice, and some people do it in a lifetime to do, you know, to complete this achievement. Like, it's an honor job.
Yeah.
I think he wants me to show me that.
Alain Passard, who has Partage in Paris, he talks about when he cooks his gestures.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't just talk about the end product, but he talks about his gestures. When he pours salt in a dish, he wants it to be in a beautiful manner.
And when
he cuts, he wants it to be done in a beautiful manner. So
yeah, like Chef Thomas said, that he likes to see all the chefs in the kitchen, in his kitchen. And it's for him, it feels like he's doing ballet. You know, people moving.
Yeah, being gracious.
It is.
Yeah. That's amazing. So sorry, just to go back to that, though, how many years did it take until you actually became a cook? You weren't just helping. You were now a cook.
Mm-hmm.
How many years did it take before that happened?
I mean, it's just going step by step. Like, I would say like a year or two, and then I'd be able to, you know, feel comfortable in
now
in
every
the kitchen.
Day you were putting on your chef voice.
Yes, yeah. And learn how to do all this stuff.
And then eventually Chef Tony had to leave you
guys.
Yes,
because of his family problem.
Okay.
So after like 5 years, he left.
So then you took the position as head cook within the group. And it's kind of just gone from strength to strength from there, right?
Yeah, I think it just learned from the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, you really do put a really, really great twist on it, and I really have enjoyed eating the food there because it's not just Thai food. It's Thai food done with the twist. It introduces you to another region within the area.
Mm-hmm.
And have you found that you're able to blend French cuisine and Thai cooking? Have you found that it's something that you're able to do?
Yeah, I think it's not just only French cuisine. Like we found out like the cooking in many, many parts of the culinary, like even Japanese, Chinese, or Italian, you know, I can incorporate with everything and become, you know, Thai flavors. I think that's the main thing that Wat Pinto is trying to be. Like, we just create a Thai flavor dish that people can, you know, remind it to Thailand or whatever. Yeah.
And just to give listeners and me personally a feel for Thai food, because Thai food is something that unfortunately in Western world is so often associated with takeaway or restaurants to go.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly with Chinese food, a lot of people would associate Chinese food with to-go food. They wouldn't associate it with some of the high-end Chinese restaurants mm-hmm. where you can dine in. If you wanted to create a simple dish, let's go for the typical dish like a pad Thai, what's a very simple way for someone to go about that so that they can cook it at home? What would be the core ingredients that you would need for something like that?
Like a pad Thai?
Yeah.
Pad Thai is like, definitely you need tamarind sauce.
Okay.
Because it's like a main ingredient. You don't use vinegar, you don't use lime to make the tanginess. So you need the tamarind sauce. And there's other ingredients that you can put it on, lots of it. But tamarind, dry chili, fish sauce.
Yeah, fish sauce is one of the crucial ingredients for Thai cuisine, right?
I think it's for the Southeast Asian food, you need fish sauce. It's like, you know, Italian, you need olive oil, those kind of stuff.
And one thing that's worth noting for people that want to get Thai food is that Thai food isn't just the same all over Thailand. There's different regions within Thailand, right?
Yes.
So there, you've got the south, the north, the northeast, and central Thailand.
Yes, there's four parts of Thailand. If anyone can ever been to Thailand, you will see the difference. They even speak different languages. They have their own languages in different regions. So the food is represent them as well. Like the south, they eat very, very spicy. I would say the spiciest region of Thai food. And the northeast, it's close to Laos, so and they have like more vegetables, so they eat lots of vegetables. And sticky rice is from northeast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And from the north, they are kind of like live in the hill and the mountain, so they eat something like mai and cream and coconut.
And it's more brothy. It's more of the soupy dishes, right?
Like khao soi is from the north, like the popular dish. It's very creamy, very thick, very coconut milk. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in center, that's Bangkok. That's where you have the street food.
Yes.
And then pad Thai. That's where the famous pad Thai is from.
Yeah, pad Thai is originally from Bangkok.
But you were telling me, which was quite interesting, that a lot of food from central Thailand, especially Bangkok, is with Chinese influence.
There's a lot of immigrants from China in Thailand. Like my grandparents are from China as well. They immigrated into Thailand for a long, long time. So they have their own food. Like a Chinese Thai food, you know, they use the Thai ingredients to create their own noodles. Like pad siu is from the Chinese Thai food. So Thai government thought that the noodle is getting more popular in Thailand. They have to create some noodles for themselves, so they create their pad Thai. You know, that's why they name it pad Thai. So they put the noodle with the dry shrimp, with the tamarind sauce, with the lots of chilies, you know, to make it spicy. That's how we got our own dish, the pad Thai.
And with you and with other restaurants that are opening up in New York and around the world, and especially restaurants like Pok Pok that are putting like, you know, a regional focus on Thai food, Thai food is probably making a great leap to becoming a respected region of gastronomy in Asia, because, you know, China to some extent, but definitely Japan is very regulated, almost like French, like France is, like Italy is, like Spain is, for the ingredients that come, that they're respected mm-hmm. and they're certified. But that hasn't really gotten to a stage in Thailand yet, has it?
Yeah, not yet. So, I mean, sometimes, like I just notice it when I'm a chef in here, when I get like coconut milk or when I get the fish sauce, like I see the different quality of the fish sauce and coconut milk, those kind of stuff. Once you use it, you know, and then they not have the standard yet. So even though the same brand that I keep using it, but you know, it's still some problem. I think that's the future, that what we'd be able to do to give like a grade or, you know, like a quality control of the fish sauce and the coconut milk. But it depends on the weather. It depends on like many factors of using that too.
Yeah. That, well, I suppose that would give a great level between having a basic Thai restaurant and a high-end restaurant. By having those grading systems, you would definitely know what you're going in to eat.
Yes.
What is high quality and what isn't. Because you were mentioning that sometimes there's flour in coconut milk.
Yeah, some brand that uses flour to make it thick.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's not surprising. There's a lot of weird stuff in food that we don't know about.
That's true.
So now Pinto's made a growth. It's moved on after 5 years. It's going a lot better. Like you mentioned, well, you mentioned to me yesterday, Yelp was a great helper to you. People actually just coming and eating at the restaurant and sharing their thoughts on it. That made the restaurant grow exponentially.
Yeah, I was thanks to the social media world.
Yeah.
Welcome to, that helped the small business. Because we opened it literally, we didn't plan for the budget to marketing ourselves. So we opened like in the old world, like we have a restaurant, we're just waiting for word of mouth that people are going to talk about it. But once the social media come up, like it's almost like 10 years ago, right?
Probably. Yeah, but yeah, well, once it came out on smartphones and things like that, probably in 2009.
Yeah, and then we got word of mouth faster. So people talk about Pinto, people talk about our iced tea, people talk about the crab fried rice, like that we bake in the young coconut, like those kind of things that people taking pictures and spread it around. Like it makes our small business grow faster within like 5 years back. Yeah.
So Pinto Brooklyn opened up a year ago.
Yes, we opened it in January 2016. We expanded to Brooklyn Heights with a bigger, larger location, and focuses more into the farm ingredients.
Okay, so if people are looking to choose between Pinto Garden or Pinto Brooklyn, what difference can they get between the two restaurants?
For the Pinto Brooklyn Heights, you'll be able to explore the classic Thai American food. Like you used to have the pad thai with chicken, with shrimp or whatever that you like. You'll be able to choose it. And also you'll be able to explore our signature like khao soi chicken that we pan roasted the whole chicken with the khao soi sauce. You know, those kind of stuff.
Okay.
But for the Pinto Garden, we change the menu seasonally. So every time you come to Pinto Garden, you will explore the legions of Thai food. I play with the north, the northeast, the south, the central. And it's meant to be shared for the family style that I like to have it in, especially in 2017, that people are paying attention to themselves more, not paying attention to the others. So I like to have the food experience, like a community food that people be able to talk about it and sharing the experience together at the Pinto Garden.
Yeah. And I think it's worth mentioning that it kind of came full circle for you because Thomas Kelleher came to your restaurant.
Yes, he came to Pinto Brooklyn Heights.
And then you had a chance to go and visit him a few times in Per Se and get a perspective outside of the book and in the kitchen to see what made Per Se so special as a restaurant.
It is. It's kind of like make me go see a real Broadway show and see a real movie star, those kind of stuff, you know. It's such an honor, though, to be able to experience that. And it's very inspiring, like not just the book, but to see myself and to experience myself. So it's kind of like change your perspective and encourage me to be a chef and proud to be a chef.
Totally, man. You deserve a pat on the back because for someone to have gone from a career so unrelated to food to have reestablished themselves in the food business, start from scratch, learn all the way up, put your heart and soul into it at 26, even a little bit later, and work your way up, and then to be recognized by the guy who you learned from, and he didn't even know that you were learning from him.
Yeah.
It goes to show that you've done well for yourself. So congratulations to you and to Kobe, because you're doing very, very well with Pinto. I had a wonderful meal there. I really, really enjoyed myself.
Thank you.
And before we leave, I want to ask, as I always do, what has the food industry given you since you...
Oh, my God. Totally give me like new perspective, and the food is the thing that people around the world connect. That I think it's the main thing that it will bring people all together. Like in the future, I don't know what's gonna happen to the world, but people need to eat.
Food will always be there.
Will always related to no matter what you came from, no matter what your religion is. The food will be able to connect to the people, to you all, and it give me to the new world and my career and lots more to learn about. Like, it's nonstop learning about the food.
Wonderful. Well, I hope 2017 is very successful for you guys. For anyone that wants to eat at Pinto, be it at Brooklyn or in the West Village, the address is at the bottom of the show description. So if you just expand upon the show description, you can see it there at the bottom. As always, I want to say a huge thanks to Heritage Radio Network for putting 35 shows out on the air every week and giving the food community such a wonderful platform to converse and giving people an opportunity to explore the wide boundaries of the food and beverage industry. There's two new shows this season, so please be sure to check them out. I always want to thank the wonderful David Tadashore, who has produced today's show. He's recently got a podcast that he's putting out himself that'll be airing next Tuesday, so please find out to check it out. And if you ever want to get in touch with me, please do. If you have a story, if you're in the States, if you're abroad, wherever you are, share it, and we'll try and give it a voice. You can always catch me on whyfood@heritageradionetwork.org. I won't be on air next week, but I will be in 2 weeks' time, and we're going to go ahead week by week with the different section of the food industry. So please stay in touch, and thank you so much for everyone that listens. See you in 2 weeks, guys. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.